After a longer than anticipated radio silence,
we're back.
The Pat's Pints, Mark's Mugs podcast is back at you.
We're back on it. A little hiatus only because sometimes we get busy.
We did, yeah. I had to go to Japan, for example.
Pat's big in Japan. True story.
We're back just in time because today is the kickoff of Columbus Craft Beer Week. What better time to be a craft beer lover than today in Columbus, Ohio?
That's right.
What do we got going on for the May show?
Lenny Colada.
And Sam Hickey from Smokehouse Brewing. And they're going to tell us about their new venture, which is going to be Common House Ales. Maybe not everybody knows about Sam. Comes to Columbus through kind of an interesting route. Lived in Dublin when he was younger, Ohio. But his most recent stop before here was he was at Mystic Brewing in Boston, which is a pretty interesting brewery, actually doing a lot of interesting things with yeast, sort of, you know, very innovative. So you've got kind of what I would say a new school kind of approach to brewing with this sort of old school,
as old as it gets in Columbus, almost.
Just about. Should be good to know. We get to try some of their beers, and I'm expecting them to be pretty tasty.
Yeah, well, hey, talking about good beer in Ohio.
The World Beer Cup. Now, you just came back from the Craft Brewers Convention, and so, first of all, how was that? Is it a fun thing to go to?
Yeah.
Do you think I would have liked it?
Yes, you'd have been in heaven.
In Ohio, Ohio did, as I would expect, pretty well this year.
Five breweries brought home awards from the World Beer Cup. Fat Heads being one of them.
With a Hop Juju, right?
That's right.
Gold medal in the Imperial IPA category. And I'm just going to say, I have not done the research on this, but I bet there's not many beers that won the gold medal at the GABF and the World Beer Cup in the same cycle.
It's a great beer.
Man, I wish we could get more of it around here. What about locally?
Well, locally, extremely locally to us right now, is North High Brewing got a silver for their pale ale.
Kudos to the guys at North High. And the other beer I'd just like to give a shout-out to is North High's Stardust to Stardust, the David Bowie-inspired Imperial IPA. And also, they've got a kind of a neat thing going with the Ella Pale Ale, don't they?
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Yeah, so... You know, North High is on a roll right now, I've got to say.
Little Fish Brewing got a gold for Barrel Aged Wood Thrush.
That's a barrel aged sour, is that right? Made with lacto and Brett?
I believe so.
Have you tried it? I have not tried it yet.
Not tried it.
Wow.
I missed the bus.
I wish I could try it.
50 West.
A gold for the barley wine, right?
That's right. And Willoughby got a bronze for their Nut Smasher.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds painful. Is that based somewhat on their, you know, Willoughby is known for that peanut butter porter, I think, or something.
I think that was the inspiration.
That one's an imperial stout, though, isn't it?
That's right.
I've got some beers to try, I have to say. You know, while we're on the topic of local beers, we're drinking tonight, in commemoration of our first podcast, a bottle of the actual Tenacity Brett beer, and that has aged very nicely, I'm going to say.
Delicious.
Drink local. Drink often.
Since we've been gone, some news. I think at the top of the list this month would be brewery expansions.
I know of at least three that fall in that category.
All right.
Ill-Mannered.
Adding fermenters. And also, I think the Ill-Mannered team, there's four people on the Ill-Mannered team, and half the team now has quit their day jobs and they're full-time brewers.
Also, Sideswipe. Doubled their space. They took the space next door. I think they're enlarging their tap room and maybe also capacity.
It was a pretty small space before, so I think the doubling is definitely warranted. Good reason to run out to the west side and get yourself some tasty beer.
Then we've also got Zaftig in the shadow of the Budweiser Brewing.
Yeah. Now, during this interim, during our sabbatical from the podcast,
we've had a sneak peek preview, and it's looking pretty sexy up there.
And for those who've been to the old Zaftig Tap Room, this is, I would just have to say, a massive expansion.
Right? Massive.
It's going to be a big place. It's going to have a bunch of shiny stainless steel coming in from Portland Kettle Works, and that's the Portland on the West Coast, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, and then that's on the 21st of May. You can get in there and check it out. Their big grand opening. I think we plan on making a trip, Pat.
Absolutely. All right. We are on the verge of the second annual Columbus Craft Beer Week, which lasts more than a week, by the way. But that's all right with me, because the more craft beer, the better. So we thought for this month's episode, we would do our top 10 list, which is actually five each. It's an expansion on the top five list of the best events from the Columbus Craft Beer Week.
Well, first of all, it may not be the best events of the week, but at least it's some picks that we found that we think we definitely want to go to.
Definitely subjective.
Yeah, I think there's so many events that everybody can find something to go to, and all of them, I'm sure, are going to be fantastic and unique in their own way.
Absolutely.
Going in chronological order of the week is actually Friday the 13th.
What's that?
Jason is coming to kill us all. And that's kind of weird that that would be a beer event, but I guess we're going to drink beer first.
Yeah, you want to get ready.
So the CCBW, do you know what that stands for?
Columbus Craft Beer Week.
Nailed it. The kickoff event is at the Market District Giant Eagle in Grandview from 6 to 9, 20 breweries. There's going to be some unique beers unveiled there.
There is a single official collaboration beer this year, and that's going to be unveiled there, which is, do you know anything about that?
It's a Saison, and it is a collaborative event from brewers all over town, and it was brewed at North High.
I saw Mary mashing in, actually. So if you're looking for something a little bit different on Friday night, opening night of Columbus Craft Beer Week, you might think about heading out to Actual for their kitten party, which starts at 6 p.m. And that's going to be, they're going to have Cozy Cat Cottage there with adoptable kittens. Just the name alone, I mean, a kitten party sounds pretty good. And then that's going to morph into, a little bit later in the night, Tiger Party.
Oh, sure.
Not a lot of details on that, just something about misbehaving.
Fair enough.
What's up for Saturday?
Mini Real Ale Fest.
That's a no-brainer.
Should be some interesting beers. $35, noon to 3, 12 drinks, and commemorative shaker pint glass.
And you know where you can go right after the Mini Real Ale Festival? Since you're already out sort of on the west side, why not go on out to Sideswipe for the grand reopening? They've expanded out there, and you know, any chance you get to go out to Sideswipe, I think you should do it. So that's going to be from 5 to 10 p.m. on the Saturday, the grand reopening at Sideswipe.
You can find me there.
I'm going to be there too.
Going forward
Sunday.
To Sunday the 15th, a Seven Sun beer and donuts pairing.
Is the Columbus Craft Brew Alliance part of that?
But of course they are.
Of course, with the beer and donuts, they have to be.
$20.
Not bad for some beers and some donuts. Right down the street from Seven Sun, kind of across from Hoof Hardy, right? And what is so good about Fox and the Stone? What do you like there?
The perfect representation of every baked good that they make. Cross the street at Hoof Hearted. Did I say that right?
You did, depending on your persuasion.
We've got a Skip the Sabbath, and I hope this is no disrespect to Tony Iommi.
And Black Sabbath? No, I don't. I'm sure with Trevor it's not.
Imperial French Toast Stout Bottle Release.
Okay. Keep America crunchy. Sunday is a big day, because later in the day, I don't know how many people have ever been to one of the beer tasting events at Studio 35 up in Clintonville, but those are always a lot of fun. And on Sunday the 15th, they're going to have 10 beers you've never had before.
I hear there's going to be some interesting beers from breweries all over town.
So that's going to start 2 p.m. Comes also with, at the end of the beer tasting, which usually runs about 2 hours, they're going to show Captain America Civil War. Cost on that would be $30 for the beer tasting and the movie. So there's a variety of events going on through the week. Anywhere you go, there could be a craft beer event going on. The one thing I did want to highlight, Brewcadia, upstairs from Barley's, all 40 taps dedicated to Ohio beers all week.
And that's all week long.
All week long. And if you've not been there, that's a good excuse to go.
On Friday, the big event is 6-1 Pour. And this is the second annual. There will be 50 breweries represented there. Food, music. Last year, it was over in the brewery district.
Right.
This year, it's going to be at Huntington Park where the Clippers play.
That's a good place for a beer festival.
Taking over the park.
Now, what's the cost on that?
For peasants, it's $50.
That's right.
For those requiring a VIP entrance, $75.
Now, you would think with that big event, that would be the end of Craft Beer Week, but not quite. It goes on, I think, through the second weekend. I'm just going to highlight one event that is post 6-1 Pour. and that would be the Tapper Takeover at 16-bit, featuring beers from 6-7 local breweries. And I think you can also challenge the beer representatives to see if you can beat them at Tapper.
Maybe that's right. And it, you know, what a great game. For somebody that wants to pour a beer, why not do it 80s style?
in pixelated format.
Yeah.
In silica.
That's right. That's right. In pixelated form. Get those customers served.
Welcome to another episode, and we've got some distinguished guests on tonight, Lenny Colada and Sam Hickey from Smokehouse Brewing and Common House Ales. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about Common House Ales. What about the timeline?
If you look at it from a, you know, like maybe an astronaut looking at Earth.
Yeah.
Man, we are right on schedule. I mean, what's the difference, right? You know, it's been a few years in the planning, too, a couple years. This whole idea started at the Mini Real Ale Festival 2 years ago when Eric Bean walked up to me and said, hey, if you know anybody who wants to buy brewing equipment, my brewery's for sale because we're going to be expanding. And I called him the next day. I said I might be interested. In one sense, I don't have anything left to prove. I don't need to start another brewery. I don't have to put my kids through college. All that's done. You know, it's like I can ride out into the sunset. But could I do something? Is it possible to do something where maybe I can expand the mission of what a company is, of what a business is? And that's irrespective to beer. So those kind of thoughts were rumbling around. And I said, it really comes from within, all of us within, to make the world a better place. I was wrestling with that almost a rhetorical, philosophical way of thinking. If I could start a brewery that not only makes kick-ass beer, that makes a difference, and that makes people happy, but also might be able to maybe show by example how somebody can do more. And so that's why, you know, Common House Ale, you know, has a social purpose to it, as well as a profit motive. What we like to say now is we know beer is good, but we're going to find out if we can make beer for good. If you don't think about any details, or anything, isn't that a cool thing to think about? That you could drink beer and maybe change the world? That's really kind of what Common House is all about, and the B Corporation and all that stuff.
Explain the B Corporation. I don't think I fully understand that, even though I...
Okay. Even if you read about it, it's not something you digest immediately, but basically B Corporation is run by a nonprofit organization called B Lab. The B stands for benefit.
Okay.
Two guys that were thinking the same thoughts that I was thinking. And so I didn't know about B Corporation at the time. I found them afterwards and I go, this is what I'm doing, you know. And B Lab is a nonprofit organization that audits you once a year for all sorts of things. Are you viable? Are you treating your employees well? Are you doing something for the environment? Are you community-minded? And they don't specify you must do this, you must do that. Good corporations will buy solar panels.
Okay.
They just want to know, what have you come up with to address these kind of major issues? So we're the first brewery, B Corporation, pending in Ohio. And hopefully within about a year or so, we will actually be certified a B Corporation.
Okay. Can you give us some examples of...
Who might be?
Well, other places. Are there any other breweries who are B Corporation?
Yeah, well, I'll throw out a non-brewery one.
Okay, yeah.
Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream.
Okay.
On the brewery side, New Belgium. They didn't start out that way, but New Belgium is now 100% employee-owned. New Belgium built the water treatment plant for the city of Fort Collins because they didn't have the money, and New Belgium was outgrowing the town. You know, they give their employees a bicycle on their one-year anniversary and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And then they did Aesop eventually. And it's cool. It's just a different way to do business. You don't have to be a dick.
Well, actually, you know, it's slightly off the topic, but I was reading Facebook today, and Fred Lee from Actual was, and he had posted a video about Bernie Sanders. But anyway, his point was that people who run corporations have an obligation to pay their employees a living wage, to do things. You know, it's not all about just, like, money is not adultery, you know.
Right.
And it's a good point, I think.
Well, you know, just for a second, let's suspend the for the greater common good. I read something that I found fascinating. Before Reagan took office, the top tax rate was 90%. Okay. So above a certain income level, the government would take 90% of everything that you earned. So there really wasn't any incentive, and growth kind of stagnated. But the thing that I read that was fascinating, in that environment, because the tax rate was so high, guess what companies did with their money?
I bet they put it into the community.
They put it into their employees.
Oh, yeah.
They paid them better. They bonused them because they could deduct it.
Yeah.
And it would lower their income to where they weren't up in that stratosphere. Okay. And now it's the opposite. It's like as much as you can get away with.
Yeah.
Which, fortunately for me, and I told these guys that are part of the Common House team, we want to do things right. And that's what we're doing right now. We're doing a couple things we probably wouldn't have to do on startup, but it'll be easier down the road. It'll be a better environment to work in, and we'll come out when we're ready. But we're getting close. So our flagship beer does have a social purpose. A dollar from every six-pack is going to go to an account that we call Common House Shares.
Okay.
It's an account with the Columbus Foundation, and one of the stipulations is that once we give them the money, we can't ask for it back, like if we need to make payroll or something.
Okay.
The only way that that money ever leaves is to a charitable U.S. company.
So is that an existing organization, or is that one that
Columbus Foundation?
I'm sorry for my ignorance.
No. Columbus Foundation is one of the largest, if not largest, nonprofit organizations in the country.
Okay.
Started here in Columbus. The amount of people who quietly, through the Columbus Foundation, which they're just a mechanism to get money from point A to point B, do a lot for local charities. So we know we're not rich, but we did fund it to start it with $10,000, a dollar from every six-pack, and then a portion of the sales from keg sales also will go there. Hopefully, if we do this right, and don't forget, I've never done this before, all of this, any of this, so it's all new. But what we hope is to shine a light on charitable organizations here locally in Central Ohio that have great missions. So that's why I decided to do another brewery project. Plus, it's kind of cool to do production. You know, I've done the brew pub thing for...
It's a new thing for...
Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun, a lot of discovery. And, you know, probably our whole podcast is up now because I talk too much.
That's all right. That's all right. Well, let's talk about the beers that Common House. What are we drinking here?
This is the Chill Sesh. It's a session IPA that we do at Smokehouse right now. And this beer will actually be following us to the production site at Common House Ales.
For Common House Ales, we're going to do something a little different. It's going to be called Summer Sesh and Winter Sesh.
Okay.
Winter Sesh, a little darker malts.
Okay.
Chill Sesh will be split in half, and 6 months out of the year will be summer. The other six, it'll be winter.
Okay.
So cheers.
Well, cheers.
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 Very quaffable.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a nice balance for a session IPA, because a lot of session IPAs are a little too astringent with the hops.
Yep. I held off from having a session IPA brewed for several years because I find them a little bit one-dimensional. They're a little bit thin and understandably at a lower ABV. The combination of the hops, which gives you a little bit of tropical, then also a little bit of bitter tail, and there's actually a little bit of mouthfeel to it. We used oats in there to kind of round it out without affecting the flavor too much, and we think it works really well.
The mouthfeel's not thin at all. What is the ABV on this?
4.6.
4.6. Wow. Yeah, it's nice.
55 IBU. So, I mean, it's up there, but it doesn't really taste like it's up there. I was actually having an all day the other day. I noticed it was, I think, 45. Yeah, and I thought it came off as the perceived hops to be even hoppier than this beer. Just a little bit more, you know, that bitter sort of bite. Than this one.
I'm guessing maybe because it feels a little thinner, you're going to taste the hops more. And we wanted something a little more balanced, but it's definitely a bitter beer.
Well, what's notable about it to me is I think it's got kind of a creamy mouthfeel, and that again, it probably comes from the oats.
Yep.
Yeah.
What's the what kind of hops are used in this beer?
In this beer we use Citra,
Amarillo, maybe?
Amarillo, Wakatu, and Sriracha Ace.
All right. Oh, wow. So the Wakatu. So you've got the Southern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. Isn't that a New Zealand hop?
Yep.
Is that
yep. right? New
and
Zealand
then the Sriracha Ace is kind of this lemony hop that was bred in Japan.
Right. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, those are both finishing hops.
Yeah, the Sriracha and the Wakatu.
And the Wakatu, yeah.
Well, and that, I mean, I think that also sets it apart a little bit from mm-hmm. a pretty crowded area. I mean, IPAs in general, and there's a lot of session IPAs right. out there. But
I think another thing that kind of sets it apart, too, is what I'm now dubbing the Common House yeast strain. It kind of offers up some apricot notes. It's a yeast strain that...
It was a year ago, January, that Sam isolated this yeast strain.
Yeah.
Now, when you say you isolated this strain of yeast, and then you singled out mm-hmm. something you liked...
Sort of, yeah. We found a yeast somewhere that we thought had good promise.
No.
Okay.
It's a really interesting story about that. That Common House yeast strain, and I don't feel comfortable telling it because then everyone would go, hey, it's like let's just try it. Let's try it. We'll just do a pilot brew with that. You know, we'll do what Smokehouse did, you know, and somewhere you got to have some sort of secret.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know.
It's an interesting story that you'll never know.
Well, you know, I think a good rule of life is, keep one secret from your wife and one secret from the brewing community.
The older strain of yeast, that is that related to the barley strain?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep. And
which is a very interesting backstory in its own right.
Yeah, right. It's basically the Fuller of London's yeast.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of your listeners, they may not realize the craft beer movement got started as a result of the home brewing movement that got started because Jimmy Carter signed it into law. Most home brewers who wanted a variety back in the day, late 70s, mm-hmm. early 80s, they wanted variety and they had to pick something. Yep. So British ales. This whole beer craze could be a whole different taste experience if those brewers decided we want to do Belgians because right. that is way whack, you know, mm-hmm. and we really want it different. So that's where it started, and that's why you see so many pails and stouts yeah. and porters and IPAs. But sure. It sure has exploded from there.
Sam, what do you think about IPAs and the evolution of IPAs?
The evolution of IPAs to me was brewers got a new toy and they played with it relentlessly. And to a point of exhaustion, and we're still kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fine. I mean, there's some really great IPAs out there. There's also some really bad IPAs out yeah. there. But that's kind of the progression we've gone. Now the new toy is sour. I've had some yeah. fantastic sours. I've had some horrendous sours where I just thought someone put just a douse of vinegar in my pint of beer. What was trendy and what was cool, and everyone else followed suit and kept going with it and was trying to outdo each other and not necessarily think about the design of the beer.
Yeah.
But to just outdo the guy to the left and to the right of you.
Well, I think if you drink beers that are universally recognized as being world-class beers, you know, and we could all name some, but I mean, even a sour like a Cantillon.
Right.
I mean, one of the trademarks of all of those beers is there's a balance there. Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know?
And that model is not always pursued yeah. in American craft brewing.
No, absolutely. I totally 100% agree with that comment.
The parallel, if you think about cooking with, let's say, the spices in Indian food or right. Asian food,
yeah.
right? I mean, when done well, it adds
it's
so
great.
Much.
Yeah.
But you can just make it almost unpalatable. Yeah. Right. Just with those
even
spices.
Chili. Yeah. Chili's yeah. another good example. Yeah. You put in so much, it's just hot. I call that stupid hot. It's hot yeah. for its sure. own sake yeah. as opposed to flavor.
Just becomes a macho kind of thing
yeah,
or something
right.
like
right.
that.
Yeah.
So yeah, stupid hot, stupid hoppy, and stupid sour are possibilities.
Just stupid.
So year-round beers, seasonal beers.
What we're thinking is that our year-round beers should be the most accessible. and our seasonal beers more interesting to the more mature craft beer drinker. Chill Sesh is a year-round beer, but with two personalities. Then our other flagship is called 614 Good Ale. It's 6.1% ABV, so that's the 6-1 F-O-R. Good. We have decided to dub it, and haters are going to hate that we didn't put it in exactly a style that they're comfortable with. True to the style of a California common, but we did it kind of our way. Otherwise, the recipe fits common ale to a T.
Okay.
And we're calling it Ohio Common. First week of May, it'll be out. And okay. that should be as close to what we're going to be putting in bottles and kegs as we can get with a 10-barrel test.
Sam, why don't you tell us about the beer we're drinking?
So what we're currently drinking is Hoptopus.
If we can get on the street by July, Hoptopus will be our first seasonal beer out.
It'll be the first one out. Nice wheat pale ale, as we call it, made with Mosaic and Amarillo. A touch of Citra in it as well. It's just a beer that I really like. I know Alex, our assistant brewer, I think this is his favorite beer. He gets like giddy when we start to brew it.
It's tasty. It's real tasty.
It's the one we use both of our house strains in.
Did you pitch them at the same time?
No, actually. I start with the smokehouse strain first, let it ferment 50% the way through, and then I pitch the common house strain to kind of give it just a little bit more depth.
Okay. That's cool. Well, hey, it's tasty beer, and cheers.
Thanks. Really
nice. Yeah. Well,
you know, what I would say is when I... On the nose, I was thinking before he even said, I said, this probably has Mosaic hops in it. Because Mosaic is different things to different people, but kind of a melony flavor almost.
Absolutely,
to me.
Melony. Yeah.
Mosaic's just a great hop.
Yeah.
It's also so freaking expensive.
I just did a Firkin. We do Firkin Fridays at the Smokehouse. I just actually, because it's just so melon forward, I actually just did a Firkin with Honeydew.
Wow. Yeah. How did it turn out? I bet it was good.
I wasn't there for it because I was at the production site that day.
I never got to taste it. Crazy.
Yeah.
It was really, really refreshing.
I've done it once before and I know it turns out well. So that's why I did it.
Yeah, the Honeydew works well for Hoptopus and the Honeydew works well on the Session IPA.
Yeah. Oh, I believe
it's really good. It gives a really just a nice little juiciness to it.
Yeah.
Also, there's that kind of American hop citrus kind of thing, which probably comes from the Amarillo, too, that goes with it.
Right.
You know, on our last podcast, Trevor Williams from Hoof Hearted, we were talking hops, and he was calling Mosaic the sluttiest of all hops or whatever.
It goes so well with every other hop.
It just, you know, it's hard not to like it.
By itself, I actually don't like it. If you do a single Mosaic hop beer, actually, it's not that great. But if you partner it with something, what Mosaic does so well is that it accentuates the notes and those other hops and just makes them just blow up in a way you didn't know that that other hop could.
So what are the other seasonals that people can look forward to?
Can we talk about the bane of every brewer's existence?
Pumpkin beers?
Pumpkin beers. I am not a fan of pumpkin beers.
I haven't met many brewers who would...
No one is.
I just couldn't see us ever doing one until now. About 2 years ago, I started doing some research. And if you read about colonial brewing and the challenges that they had, England was taxing them on their ingredients and taxing them more and more because they thought if they could make beer so expensive, the colonists would say, uncle,
import
fold
beer,
and, you know, be a subject of England. The colonists decided to look at alternatives. Pumpkin, if you read about it, was used in brewing up until about the 1920s when pilsners started, the lager craze started more, and then Prohibition came around. Mm. The pumpkin beers disappeared.
Okay.
Until craft.
But it persisted, really, for over 100 years. Yeah.
Well over 100 years.
Yeah, 150, 160
And most people don't know that, and I really didn't know that until I started reading about the history of this. I really got to thinking hard about this, and I said, I should really rethink pumpkin beers. what did the colonists actually do? They certainly did not brew pumpkin, right?
I'm pretty sure they did.
I'm pretty sure they did not. Well, it turns out one of the favorite styles of the day was porter. A pretty authentic historical beer would be a pumpkin porter. I decided let's make it imperial. Called Punkt, P-U-N-K-T. For Halloween, Thanksgiving, and through Christmas, we are brewing a version of a colonial imperial pumpkin porter.
Okay.
And we decided we are not doing a holiday beer because everyone does a Christmas ale and everybody. Instead, we're doing a non-holiday beer. It's a winter ale, 7.2%. And since it's not a holiday beer, we're calling it Imagine. Read Lennon's lyrics and you'll figure out what this beer is all about. I think that we have come up with an Imperial IPA that is so good. What you got out of the Hoptopus, those tropicals, and then the bitter tail, dry finish, but it has a malt backbone to it. And it's called I Be You, You Be Me.
I saw the name. Cool. I like the name. Yeah,
and that's a great name. 8.6% ABV, 98 IBUs.
Yeah,
and that'll be January of 2017.
Okay,
right on.
Mini Real Ale Festival coming up, right? Mm-hmm. So tell us the details on that. And this is the 13th year, is that right?
Yeah, it is the 13th year. Quite unbelievable. Around the turn of the century, the Real Ale Festival in Chicago. Unbelievable, like a kid in a candy store for someone who's in the business. There were firkins from any brewery you could name. They were there, and they were all there to be judged. We're talking 400 firkins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, this is really a primitive art, but it's a high art form because it's hard to pull it off. Get the conditioning right, get all your ingredients right. So Real Ale is defined as beer that has been naturally carbonated in a vessel, just like it was before the Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
Before mechanization, how was beer made?
Yeast did it.
Yep.
Yeast did it. And so there's all these firkins in Chicago. Ray told me one year, I said, Ray, this is awesome. I said, I hope you're doing okay on this. He said, actually, my credit card has been run up, and my wife has threatened to divorce me if I don't stop doing this festival, because it was a real labor of love. He stopped doing the festival. She divorced him anyway. There's never going to be another Real Ale Festival, so that's why we started the Mini Real Ale. We would never call it the Real Ale Festival. Okay. First couple of years, we had firkins from all over the country. As the years have evolved and as craft has grown, we started to shrink it down and say, let's focus on Ohio. I think it's cool to represent what Ohio has best to offer. And now, for the last 2 years, it's more Central Ohio focused.
Okay.
I'm not telling you what you should make. I'm not telling you how much you should charge us for the firkin. Just bring us your best.
Okay.
Bring us something that you're really going to be proud of. Because, number one, I, as a fan of beer, want to see what the state of the art is. And the firkin is the best way to state that. It really gets all of your chops in one little vessel. And so this year we've got a baker's dozen, 13 breweries, including us, Land Grant. Mark is going to be there.
Now, Pat, are you going to be attending this?
I hope to. Yes, I plan to.
Well, I know that I'll be there for sure, and Justin, who's been handling our firkin program, will be preparing a Paloma Stiff Arm.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. We try to hold the number of people that attend down because we don't want this to be a cattle call.
Yeah, sure.
They can go online and go to our events, click on our upcoming events. You can buy right there. If you want to save the service charge, you can buy them right at the smokehouse.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's 12 tastes. Souvenir pint glass, which you're actually drinking out of last year's.
Look at that. Yeah.
Nice glass.
And a program for $35.
Thanks for coming on. I'm excited about Common House. I mean, we've had some really good beers here tonight, and the chance to go out and, buy a six-pack or have a pint and help the community. that's a pretty inspiring thing. So I wish you all the best of luck, and I'll see you at the Mini Real Ale Festival.
Thanks, Pat. Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.